I'm Eric Clapton, musician. We could begin but with Brexit, and which is what I felt about that is irrelevant. But what I noticed was that there was a lot of trickery going on politically, and I became seriously disenchanted and suspicious about the way the government was handling everything and deceit. And I've got a good, I think I have got a good deceit, you know, like a bullshit radar. And I just saw there's something wrong, and it's getting wronger all the time. And by the time the virus came along, it was clearly chaos. And there were some really dodgy people that I thought were running the country. So when that started, I didn't really know, like any of us probably, what was going to happen next. But I did manage to see some, when the earliest part of the lockdown was going on, I saw some alternative data, which was sent to me on YouTube, a guy called Ivor Cummings, who was showing really what could be happening. And it was, I liked his delivery because it was slightly mocking, but it wasn't aggressive. It was just, this is more like it, you know, so believe what you will kind of thing. And from that, I discovered some other people who were offering alternative solutions to what was going to happen, what was happening, what was going to happen. And they were the Barrington group. So I was, because Sunetra Gupta was much more visible then, and the other guys were in America, I suppose, I watched her a lot and I listened, and I thought that's everything they said made absolute sense. So I went online, I signed on the petition and everything, and tried to follow that rhetoric as much as I could. And the more I got into that, and more I realized I was distancing myself, and that actually not only from the government, but from the rest of the public too. So whenever I spoke about the possibility of focus protection, which was different to her, because I think when they first talked about herd immunity and they added on, I think it was Boris's early press conference, then we may lose some loved ones. And I think that, woof, that's where it all fell through. And I think people, I think it wasn't more than 24 hours before they did the U-turn, because I think the public response must have been massive. But nevertheless, that's what I believe we were capable of as a society, and that's what we've always done. So I followed that path and until they disappeared. And then I thought, well, I've got this. It's all intuitive for me. I don't really know what else to go on. I'm not really a scholar. I don't know anything about sociology, science. I'm a musician. So, but I did realize that I was setting out to do a world tour. I had to cancel a year's work immediately because there was no leaving it to the last minute. Tickets were about to be sold. Which, from a selfish point of view, is devastating, because I'm of an age now where I don't know how long my faculties will go on. So I was really looking at it from selfishly to begin with. Then I realized actually there's a spiritual point to this, is that we heal, you know, proper old school people. We don't lip sync. We play, and we play for that crowd. There's something that happens when you put a great musician or someone who knows what they're doing in front of people who need support or just to have pleasure or joy. And we figure out what it is and we give it to them, and people leave and renewed. And I need that too. So I was really devastated. And then I heard that word from a friend that he was trying to do live gigs, and he was outwardly, I mean, speaking against the government policies and everything. And I mean, I think a lot of things happened in between. We had the summer, and I went away, and I thought quite strongly about taking my family away from England. We'll go and live somewhere else and start somewhere else. My wife is American, and we could go there, but the rhetoric there was even worse. in some respect, because it was all tied in with Trump. And the minute I began to say anything about the lockdown here and my concerns, I was labeled as a Trump supporter in America. And I got some pretty heavy feedback. When it came to the beginning of this year, and the Barrington guys were talking about the vaccine as being the deal breaker, you know, and I thought, okay, I have a terrible fear of needles. I hate needles. I don't want to be, and I don't even like blood samples, you know, anything like that. But I believed them. I followed that path. And when they started to talk about rolling out the vaccine, I smelled a rat again, you know, that just the way the focus was on this, and there was a race, and then it became political and national. And, I thought, here we go again. It's the same old shit. But I was diagnosed with emphysema, a couple of years ago. And I thought, well, I fit that bracket. That's pretty vulnerable. I mean, I'm 76. And if there is such a thing as this, and we didn't know anybody, you know, where I lived, there was nobody that we could, even friends of friends of friends were. It was thin on the ground. I thought, well, I ought to have this vaccination for my kids, you know, just so that I don't want to drop dead on them, or I don't want them to lose me. I don't want to lose them. All these, the normal natural responses, I think. And then, so I went and I got the notification, you can come and get, and I was holding out for AstraZeneca because it came from Oxford. And so, you know, and I'm pretty naive about this stuff. And I thought, well, that's, and also I'd heard that it was old school method of inoculation. And I went and had the jab, and I got a little green, like a library card. And I thought, well, that's what I'm going to show the people when I get on the plane. there's a lot of funny stuff about it. And within several hours, I was shaking like a leaf, and I went to bed early, and I couldn't get warm. And I thought, am I running a fever? I was boiling hot and sweating, and then I was cold, and I was out for the count for about a week, and I had been preparing for a project where I was going to be playing acoustic guitar with a couple of musicians, and we were going to film it. That week knocked me out. And I had to start again from scratch, and I was okay, but it wasn't. It didn't come off as well as I would like to, because I would professionally. It was a huge setback, and it frightened the shit out of me because I didn't know how long it would last. I then started to find out more, and it was about that time that I ran into somebody. So I said, well, here's my number. We swapped numbers. He was on Telegram. So I contacted him, and he told me about a channel where I could find lots of information and a lot of support. And so I logged on to that. There's a chap called Robin Minotti who runs a channel, and it's for anybody that's concerned or is looking for, in my case, looking for support. For me, I'd felt so alone up until that point. I really couldn't talk to my family and my kids. My teenagers were, it seemed like they'd been brainwashed. And there was a lot of that kind of going on from other, protests that were happening earlier. It was the first time I'd seen my kids passionate about anything. And I thought it was great. But I was being ostracized, and I could feel that everywhere. I could feel alienation because I held a different view. So I was trying to keep my mouth shut, but I did. I was following the channel avidly, and bit by bit, I realized that I probably shouldn't have had the first jab. But then I was offered the second, and I thought, well, what have I got? What's the point in, you know, stopping now? So I went and had the second, and that, and then it got really bad. And within about a week, I had lost, my hands didn't really work. I suffer from a condition already called peripheral neuropathy, which is nerve damage pain, really, which means that, you know, I can get numb or pins and needles. When I had the second jab, that was, it's, and they do say that condition, by the way, is progressive and it's incurable. So I had expected it to be, it's manageable. I expected it to be something that would gradually grow worse as I got older into my 80s or whatever. But always, you know, I could get some ice pack or whatever, it would be fine. This went ramped up from, on a scale of 10, say, from 3 to 8 or 9. Agony and chronic pain is not, you know, it, when you know that nothing will work, there's no medication you can take that will help, is very, very frightening. And the worst thing is you don't know when it's going to wear off or when it's going to go away. So that was... You know, that was what frightened me the most, medically, health-wise. And it still does, because I, you know, I have gigs to do, I have recording work to do, but I can't, I mean, to touch the guitar, to play the guitar, is not fun, and it's something I do, you know, then I, when I put it down, it's there until I go to bed, and I take sleeping pills because I can't sleep because of the pain, and that's not, it's not a good way to live, but and it's not all due to the vaccine, but the vaccine took my immune system and just shook it around again, and that's still going on. So, and that's then I read, you know, a lot of the evidence that I had been reading about with people that were having adverse reaction. That was on the list, was, you know, damage to the immune system.
Do you feel like you were made aware of those risks beforehand?
Oh, God, no. God, no, I didn't even know there was a yellow card report. I didn't know there was any such thing. My doctor said, oh, you should, my GP here in London said, because I had to get it done on NHS with an NHS doctor that I've known too from in the country for a long time. He didn't say anything. They gave me a leaflet for the first jab, which I didn't really look at, but they didn't say anything about adverse reactions. They do say you might feel a bit sore, or, you know, like you'd say for a, but they did say also this safe, you know, it's effective and safe. And I called my the NHS doctor after the second jab, and I said, I've been told there's a yellow card system that, where I can complain about after effects. He said, yes, have you, are they still go? Because I had told them about. And he said, well, I'll fill in the report and send it. I never saw a yellow card. I mean, that apparently that's stays with the doctor, but I didn't, you know, that stuff was not made known. I lost the use of my hands for about 3 weeks. So I thought I was in real trouble. And that's about that point. I just, I was invited by Robin Minotti to talk about it, because and it was easy to say yes, because I realized that I'm definitely, by then I realized I wasn't the only one that was suffering adverse reactions. And you know, I can't touch anything cold or hot. I have to use these, otherwise my hands will begin to burn and they'll stay burnt all day. Whether or not I have gigs to do in the autumn, I know maybe vitamin D will help. There's not much else that does do anything other than being really careful. And that, you know, that's my experience from having had the second jab. And I went to my doctor pretty quickly and said, you know, I can't have any more vaccinations. This is not possible for me, because I don't know what will happen. I don't know what will happen next. And from what I read and from what I've been told, there would be a booster in the autumn. And I said, I have to have a document that says I'm allergic. I can't have COVID vaccine, which I have in my backpack next door. And I don't, you know, I don't know what, where that will lead me, because the next thing I be, you know, through it all, actually, the point that I should have made earlier is that I believe most of all in free speech and freedom of movement, choice of movement and life, and love and kindness. And, been with all of this exposure to the polarization of the politics and the medicine and the science, I found it very difficult to be neutral because I've seen scorn and contempt from both sides, and I get caught in the crossfire a lot, but I don't really feel educated enough to know enough about either of these areas. So I'm talking today on behalf of people like me who may have been, maybe lost, maybe need to hear someone talk about it from a human point of view without condemnation. And I have, you know, when I come to work, I need to know, for instance, whether I'm playing to a welcome audience or a discriminated audience. I can't play to people that only have vaccine passports. I can't play to people that only follow, you know, that are anti-vaccination. There has to be a way to bring people together. I believe music can do that. But it's a long way away. And maybe that's good because, there's still time, I believe, for us to come together. I still follow the teachings of the Oxford group, of the Barrington group, because I think they're good people. But, I don't know how that will resolve with the movements the way they are. It's very polarized, and alienation doesn't work. It's not going to help. What happened with me and Van was he sent me some songs, and I recorded one called Stand and Deliver. When that came out in America, well, it came off his website, really. The flack I got, I didn't understand. And I was trying to say, well, this was against the UK government. I don't know what's going on now, but Van, he's going to plow right on. When I heard the next couple of things that he put out, I thought, my God, this man is fearless. And I would love to be fearless, but I'm not. I'm really, you know, I've caught this anxiety syndrome. I have it bad, and I have it as bad as I had maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago when I was devoutly following the 6 o'clock and the 10 o'clock news or talk radio or trying to find someone who's speaking a language that I can identify with. But now I've stopped watching TV. One of the cartoons was a little drawing of a guy interviewing two Quakers and saying, how come none of your community has got COVID? And they said, well, we don't watch TV. It's so true, man. There's so much of the sickness is in our heads now. We become weak, you know. If we're talking about freedom of speech, freedom of movement, freedom of choice with the vaccine, for instance, then the opposite of that is what we're experiencing. If you take that away, what we're experiencing that disturbs me most is coercion. And I had said to my friend, the doctor, my doctor, I said, do you think this vaccine thing's ever going to become mandatory? He said, ridiculous, ridiculous. They could never pull that. I mean, they'd never pull that on. I thought, well, I got a funny feeling, you know, and bit by bit, it's that. And to see celebrities, especially what really got me was ethnic minority celebrities guilt tripping their own community. That broke my fucking heart. That made me so angry. I have a lot of friends in that part of the world, and to see them preyed on like that, it's just. So there, that's where it steps into sadism for me. The photographs of the people on buses with masks on saying, don't let their sacrifice be in vain. Phew. That's bad. That's bad. It's very dark. It's very dark. It's victimization is what it is. I was reading 1984 all through this, and there's something he says. He says, how do you have full control over people? And he said, fear. He said, no, not fear. Suffering is how you get full control over people. And that's what it's come to. But it's psychological suffering, but it amounts to the same thing. And I experience it. When you get caught in the trap, well, can you believe what your heart tells you is right? Or is it going against the narrative? Can I talk about how I feel to my family? Man, it's doesn't get riskier than that. When I made that little statement, I was pleased to see that it went around without too much flack. I did get some flack from the people I least wanted to get flack from. But that fed, you know, I get it. Does that bring me back to what do I do if I go to play for an audience? Do I say, I'm not playing to you lot, you've had the jab? And to be honest, and most of my audience will be comprised of, you know, 60-year-old and older. And if those people haven't had the, I mean, I don't know how they will have held out. You know, so that has to be something that is acknowledged, forgiven, whatever. I don't think it's like an act of betrayal. I was asked to do a private gig in the Caribbean after not playing for a long time, and I was in bad shape, recovering from the second jab. And I had to fill in this government questionnaire because I was going to work again. And at some point during this, I had my phone, and my assistant was showing me how to do it on my laptop. And on my phone, this app appeared, and it said, DigiID. And I thought, what the fuck? They can't do that. You can't make me buy an app, the government app. And I deleted it, but... And that's, then I thought, now this is where it's going to stop. That's what Van says. This is going to stop. And I agree it's going to stop, but where's it coming from?
So why aren't more people
fear,
speaking out?
Fear.
Of what?
Reprisal. You know, I've been around a long time. And the people that I would probably come to see me play will come to see me play. They've seen me play drunk. They've seen me play sober. They've seen me do irrational things, behave badly. And, they come for another reason. So I'm quite secure. My fear is about what will they do to my children? My fear about vaccination is what will it do to my children? Part of the reason, maybe the biggest part of the reason why I'm talking here today with you. And that is, you know, they may go ahead. There's no way I can stop them once they've turned 18. That's their choice. I think they see it as a short-term problem that they want to go to the med, or they want to go to another country. There's something to do. You just got to do that to get clearance. To talk to my daughters about they may not be able to have kids, they don't probably care. You know, at that point in time in your life, it's not an issue. That's one of the risks I take by doing this, is that, you know, they're gonna look at me like, why don't you just keep your mouth shut, Dad? I tell you, the best bit about it for me is that I might be becoming a nuisance for those guys. I'd love to be an annoyance to some of them that sit around that table. That would give me tremendous satisfaction. But my greatest fear is what will happen to my kids. I don't want to lose their trust and love, you know. The trick they got together with the propaganda was making it so that you're responsible for other people's lives. So I can be labeled a murderer, and people would really believe that. That's powerful. It's very clever. I don't know what it will take. I agree that there would be. I've tried to reach out to fellow musicians. Sometimes. I just don't hear from them anymore. My phone doesn't ring very often. I don't get that many texts and emails anymore. It's quite noticeable, you know.
So you noticed that since you started speaking out?
Yeah. Association. But then again, on the other hand, you know, there are a lot of people on Robin's channel who've been incredibly kind and supportive, and they make me out to be a little bit of a hero behind Mike. And Van, mind you, well behind.